Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables in a capsule, changing the world one life at a time.
I've always been a health nut, and I've been taking the Balance of Nature, and I do feel better. I feel a lot stronger now, and in fact, I'm starting to do a little bit of exercises. I find that I have more energy, and I just have a feeling of well-being. I tell everyone about this. Some people feel it right away. Some people don't. But don't give up. Keep at it, and you will feel better.
Don't wait to see what getting over 10 servings of whole fruits and vegetables every day can do for you. Right now, Balance of Nature is offering free shipping and 35% off on any new preferred order. Call 800-2468-751. That's 800-2468-751. Or by going to balanceofnature.com. And make sure to receive this special radio offer by using discount code KATE.
Marxism, because there's two aspects, health and religion. And I cannot wait until you lunge into this, because this is so great. And I love how you're thinking on this too. Go for it.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on right now with COVID and then BLM, and they just kind of, they fit together in some ways. And I kind of want to do a little thought exercise about what the foundations of some of what's going on are. And if you go back quite a few hundred years before Christ, in fact, if you go back to ancient Greece, there's an oath that doctors still take today. Many doctors take it for, named for Hippocrates, the Hippocratic Oath. And the Hippocratic Oath lays out one kind of way of looking at humanity, and it's very individual. The Hippocratic Oath, it's not taken by all doctors anymore, but the Hippocratic Oath, it says things like, there's an abortion restriction in the Hippocratic Oath. It is so concerned with human life. It lays out an ethics of medicine that exists to this day that says the doctor-patient relationship is special, and that the doctor does all he can to defend for that patient as an individual. And there's a reason that if you go 600 years back in Europe, the doctor had a special place in the village.
Right.
The priest had a special place in the village. These were special people, and that's medicine.
Right.
Then you take the field of public health, where the COVID orders are coming from. When you look at the CDC, when you look at a face mask order in your own neighborhood, this is public health, and it's a different kind of field. They don't have MDs in a lot of situations. They have a different degree, an MPH. I'd like you and your listeners to look suspiciously from this point forward at anyone who has an MPH.
Interesting.
So the field of public health, it has the word health in it. That's a nice word.
Yeah.
It has the word public in it. Sometimes that's a nice word. So public health starts between the 1850s and 1880s. And it starts in England. It moves over to the east coast of the U.S. And there's a lot of kind of collective thinking around it. How can we shape society? And it's not about the individual the way a doctor is. At its very roots, public health is about a collective group of people. It doesn't look at you as an individual. It looks at society in a collective way. And it's very much concerned with behaviorism. It's concerned with engaging in behaviors to manipulate a person, as opposed to figuring out what is good for this individual, what does this individual want, and how do I help that person accomplish it.
Interesting. Is this why doctors really aren't schooled on health, but school? I mean, they're really not about health or nutrition. It's always about all these other things that they're schooled on. I always find that kind of an interesting aspect of medicine. But you know, what a great observation though too is how much public health and your doctor and your minister. The minister played counselor to everybody back at that time, right? Everybody went to them with their problems, and then you had the one doctor in town that was kind of put on a pedestal for all the knowledge that person had, and he was the only one that could cure anybody or knew what to do, right? So you take these two people that are put at the hierarchy of a village. Kind of amazing how that is still that way today, really. I mean, in many aspects. Interesting.
And this with this kind of one reason they were on this pedestal in a way is because they were taught to have a great deal of responsibility, and because they were on a pedestal because of their education, they were encouraged to honor that responsibility. So there's a lot of ethical consideration with it. And doctors and priests have done a lot of bad things throughout history. Lots of people screw up. But there's this real impressive trend through medicine saying, watch out for the individual patient. Public health, different story. And public health is really, there's a great deal of Marxism rooted in public health. So there's no reason to be surprised if you, this is the first time in American history that public health officials have kind of been given the keys to the kingdom.
Because when you're,
and we are seeing right now what happens when you give public health officials the keys to the kingdom. And you shouldn't be surprised that a bunch of Marxists shut down the most magnificent economy that has existed in world history.
Right.
You shouldn't be surprised that a bunch of Marxists tell people not to engage in daily life, but to go hide at home. You shouldn't be surprised that a bunch of Marxists tell people, no, cover that thing that is the windows to your soul. Make sure you're wearing glasses over it. Make sure you're covering your special face so no one can see you. You shouldn't be surprised when Marxists do that, and that's what's happening right now.
Oh, I love this point, because you're right. I mean, there was the individual, but public health takes on a whole new form of the collective. They only think in the collective. They can't think of individual, because everything that they're geared around basically isn't health, or they would have never told people to get out of the sun and stay inside, and which basically perpetuates virus with COVID, right? So everything that they're telling an individual to do, it's all a collective. It's the collective narrative. So what you're saying is public health is the new term for Marxism, because it's all about only the collective all the time, only the group, right?
This is so important what you just said, and it's kind of an important example of Marxism that we're seeing right now, where it's kind of like this is not entirely accurate, but in a way it is medicine plus Marxism equals public health. In a way, you could make that statement.
Yes, especially right now. Everything's being done, and even the doctors who are supposed to be more individualistic, let's say, supposed to be, are thinking in the collective, because the public health is now running the country, and the public health is telling even the doctors what to do for individuals. They're even telling them how to mark a death, like in the beginning clip. They're basically dictating how they do things. So they have now they used to be a little bit more in their corner of, we are public health sitting over here, but now public health is basically telling all of medicine basically what to do now, right?
And this, what you just said, that's huge.
It's big.
This is very important, that like someone who is not in either of those fields can step back and say, look, the doctors have this kind of philosophy. The public health professionals have this kind of philosophy. There's special things about both. Maybe they shouldn't be intermingling so freely. Maybe there should be a great wall of China between these two entities.
Yeah, because we're getting lost in that. We are getting lost. In fact, when it's only about the collective, there's no bigger form of Marxism than only thinking in the collective. So the individual is absolutely lost in this whole narrative of COVID. And you know what's interesting is the people are not identifying that, Alan. It's like, it's as if, just like with, they have amnesia about having an immune system that worked for them for decades, all of a sudden they forgot that they are an individual. We're all being treated like the collective in every aspect of our life right now.
You're right. It's bad stuff. You can go find like CDC data. So in front of me, I've got some CDC national vital statistics for black U.S. residents. If the public health field cared deeply about saving black lives right now, they would not be issuing statements. 1,200 signed a statement a few weeks ago. 1,200 public health professionals signed a statement saying these protests must continue. They don't call them riots ever. These protests must continue because the racism that they fight against is so much more toxic to humanity than the protests themselves. 2 weeks before that, they were unanimously saying that going and protesting in Michigan, a few hundred people protesting, is going to spike COVID rates and ruin humanity. So you look, you pull up the CDC data, and
Okay, we're going to come right back. You got to finish that. We're going to come right back on the Kate Daly Show. More with Al and Steve when we come back. Don't go anywhere. So, Alan, you were just about to cliffhanger Lee in a way, give the stat, and you might want to dial that back about 30 seconds and then give that stat you were just about to give.
I'll do that. We were speaking about public health and where public health might kind of focus a little bit if they were not seeking to be a political wedge, but they were seeking to save as many Black lives as possible in the name of health. So if you look at the CDC National Vital Statistics Report, and anyone can pull it up, it's easy to Google, and you go to table number 8. I've got the data in front of me right now from 2017, which was the most recent as of a few weeks ago. 2019 will come out soon. 2018 will come out soon if it hasn't come out already.
Okay.
And you got the top leading cause of death, diseases of the heart, 78,000. You can't do. That's a lot of hard work. The issue of the day, is not 78,000. It's death cause number 61, legal interventions, 152 a year, the CDC says may be happening among Black Americans. This skips 60 other causes. It skips the 8,300 people killed by discharge of firearm. Majority killed by other Black people, sadly. I don't know why that's sad. I don't know why it's sad who kills a person. If a person dies, it's sad the person dies.
Right.
And there's many other causes of death on here, such as car accidents, 6,000 people, or poisoning, such as overdose or alcohol, 8,000 people. So there are many other ways Black Americans die, but the Marxists in our public health profession are shutting down the economy using COVID, and they are dismantling and creating a wedge in our wonderful country using this 152 deaths a year, which is horrible. These deaths are horrible. I don't want people to die at the hands of the state. It's a bad, bad thing. But this is not, if you care about public health, if you care about Black lives, that's not the number one issue. That's issue number 61, according to the data.
Wow. Okay. I love it. I love that you're spelling this out. And so you mentioned that public health really is the new term for Marxism. It really is the collective. It's all about only thinking in the collective, because health is supposed to be individual, but they're taking it and saying public health, and that makes it very Marxist. Talk to me about religion, because we mentioned that the pastors and the doctors of a town, they usually had a pastor or a priest, and then they had the doctor, and that's kind of the two people everybody went to for a lot of things. And so let's talk about religion.
Yeah. You started with a segment about Illinois, about Cook County.
Yes.
And, you know, there's two, it's common. People will commonly say for the greater good. They'll just let that roll off their tongue and not even think about what they're even saying with it. When you talk about the greater good, what you're not saying is the individual made in the likeness of God. These are two very different things you're saying right here. And public health has this greater good aspect. And you might be able to come up with some statistics that say how X, Y, and Z intervention that dramatically imposes on my life is going to be 18% better for society. That's one way of doing things. Another way of doing things is things like the Declaration of Independence or where you do look at the book of Genesis and you're saying, because I'm an individual, because I'm a human being, because I'm made in the likeness of God, I have all these rights.
Yes.
And no one gets to impose on those rights. And that's how it is. So in the state of Illinois, this interesting thing happened at the beginning of the COVID nightmare. And the Northwestern University said, Governor Pritzker, we want to know if we can, for the greater good, if we can let elderly people die in our hospitals. Mm-hmm. We're going to let them, we're not going to save them if they need resuscitating. It doesn't matter what the family says. It doesn't matter what anyone, what the patient says. We're just not going to help them because people might get COVID if we do help them. And it's strange. It's strange they went to the governor. It's strange they looked to him and said, let's do this. But they knew the governor would give them a very positive answer because there's such a good relationship between Northwestern and the governor that they named a law school after him. After not just him, after the whole family, mm-hmm. Pritzker family. This is totally twisted what's happening in Illinois right now. Your listeners may be taking special note of what's happening in Illinois. And this kind of behavior, I think, segues nicely into what else is happening around Marxism and around BLM and even kind of the social justice movement where mm-hmm. where there's a need, a want for religion to make sense of the world.
Sure.
And this is something fundamental in humans. Mm-hmm. Some psychologists would argue that we need religion. We need a way to make sense of the world. So I can't blame these social justice warriors who, you know, their parents probably weren't even taught to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're finally raised, what the heck do they have to make sense of the world with? The
right.
television that they were stuck in front of to be babysat by?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you have, as you kind of look at the social justice world, you can kind of see you can start to see religion kind of poke out. Like, you know, some monks still do it. They have this thing called a tonsure. It's a special way of cutting your hair.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at monks from the 1400s, a lot of the images will be of a bald person
mm-hmm.
with hair along the sides of their head.
Right.
This was a way of kind of marking yourself. Social
okay.
justice warriors, they do body modification.
Mm-hmm.
And they do Kool-Aid colored hair.
Right.
They're marking themselves in me. Those monks, they would engage in self-flagellation.
Mm-hmm.
The woke among us must do that. They must engage in the self-flagellation. They must say that they feel so horrible about their privilege. And it's demanded that they will say, my privilege, similar to what we say about original sin in Christianity, my privilege is fundamentally an evil within me that must be atoned
mm.
for. And I know I will never work hard enough to get rid of my privilege, but I'm going to do it, darn it. And this is kind of right. There are these kinds of comparisons within
it's like a mimic.
The social justice movement.
It's like a mimic of religion and Christianity, and that is to create this other religion where they're atoning for their own sin of privilege, where things that are taken from Christianity are mimicked in a way that really have nothing to do with Christianity, but they're really forming a religion of their own religion because it's like the government is they worship the government. The government must come in to stop and stop everybody from doing what they're doing and legislate our behavior and legislate who we are. But then also, I love the aspect that you're bringing up of creating this portion of their own religion that even atones for itself. It's very weird.
It is weird. And America has this puritanical heritage. And
mm-hmm.
it's a little, you know, you read some of American history where, you know, witches get burned
mm-hmm.
and you have drownings and there's like a really nasty puritanical trend in American history, and it's so coming out right now.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out from time to time in American culture, and it is coming out so strongly right now, and it's amazing to see it coming out on the left. But that is part of American culture at this moment, this puritanism. And every person you see lose their job. They
mm-hmm.
lose their job at the hands of a lynch mob.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really a lynch mob, but it practically is.
Mm-hmm.
And then many of the people lose their jobs. They apologize.
Mm-hmm.
They apologize that they're going out the door. They feel so horrible. Mm-hmm. They want to be lynched almost.
Yeah.
And it is really playing to this puritanism at the heart of the American experiment.
You know what? You're so right on with this. Like with the BLM, it's always interesting to me as they talk about oppression, because if you're to interview anyone on their own oppression, they can't list anything they've been oppressed by. They haven't really faced oppression. And so it's kind of interesting that they go into the victim class without being an actual victim, because the ancestors were victim. In fact, if I were to have somebody on my show that wanted to talk about child slave labor in the United States from the late 1800s and early 1900s, my reaction to that would be, well, are you experiencing that now? I mean, why are we debating that right now? Same thing with BLM. It's like this constant, we want to be recognized for the victimhood of oppression, even though we're not feeling it, but our ancestors did. And so we're just going to keep bringing it up, bringing it up, bringing it up. But that's kind of strange to me, too, because not everyone that's involved in that movement or new religion of sorts is actually going through any oppression. Strange.
If you see yourself, it's confusing to you because you see yourself as an individual.
Yeah.
And you look at your neighbor, no matter what they're like, you're mm-hmm. probably seeing them as an individual. You're not seeing them as a group of people. So when you have this collectivist mindset mm-hmm. and you see the world that way, you can kind of make sense that somehow Kate's neighbor's great-great-grandparent is somehow to blame for the woes of today. And Kate deserves to be punished for that.
Yes. You're right. It is. It's very, very bizarre. And I think that's why we're all scratching our heads and going, okay, you want to take off Aunt Jemima, but you don't want to take off Michael Jordan off Nike. Why are we doing all of this? I mean, what is the point? I was just eating the syrup. I wasn't thinking about, you know, how you were oppressed 100 years ago. I'm not there in that mindset. I live in today's world. And so why are we fighting the fight of ancestors today? It's got to be why people are just scratching their heads going, what are we doing? Why are we? There's an end game to the BLM, and it isn't about what the surface conversation's about, right? It's
yes.
It's not about racism, really.
There is with this religious aspect you speak of,
mm-hmm.
There's such an important detail here that makes it not religion at all,
okay.
So far away from Christianity. There's so much garbage about it that makes it nothing near Christianity, but whatever. But there's just no way in this religion, this pseudo-religion, there's no way to find atonement. There's no way to find salvation. There's no Jesus.
Right.
You're just constantly guilty for
yeah.
forever.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yep. So that what? So whoever's at the helm of that can control. It's about control, just like going back to Marxism. It's about control. It always will be. So even the ridiculous argument on this surface layer about racism, because it can't be debated in their eyes, it really, at the end of the day, is about control. It's about entertaining more control, right?
That's 100% correct. 100% correct.
What do we do about this? Because they're intent on having, this is why they call it systematic racism, because that means it can never go away and never will. No matter what, no matter how many opportunities, no matter the fact that people actually aren't oppressed, they'll just say, if they just say systematic racism long enough, everyone goes, oh, there must be systematic racism. We need to purge ourselves even further, right?
And there's so much Marxist scholarship on this topic. It's nothing that Marx would call Marxism actually anymore, but we still, the best word we have for it is Marxism. It's the descendants of Marxist thoughts. There's so much scholarship on it that says logic is a tool of the oppressor. Mm-hmm. Logic is a tool of the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. So like, they might throw this data at you from time to time, but the data is only being used for power. It's for that moment, using it to manipulate the person you're speaking to. Just like the word racism, and I beg of your audience to no longer, your audience may be so full of people who are diligent believers in the good of humanity. The word racism has been destroyed. It has no meaning anymore, and mm-hmm. we need to go find a new term to say
yes,
what we want to say about this evil determinism that is racism, but they must not let themselves be called racist and feel bad about it.
Thank you.
It means nothing more than you are bad.
Right. Alan Stevo, you're awesome. Thank you. That was great. That was a great discussion. Wow. And I hope it opened some eyes. Thank you so much. Alan Stivo, you can check out his work. It's A-L-L-A-N, Alan Stivo. And thank you very much for coming to the show. We'll have you back in just a short while. Thank you. Really appreciate his work. You can find him at Lou Rockwell. You can Google him. Be right back on The Kate Daly Show. Do not go anywhere.